Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikaias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you, sir?
Doing well. I'm excited. I'm happy. Thank you, all you dunkers, for joining us again. Thank you for embracing your bounce. I'm just ready to go. I'm psyched. I duped you into this episode, kind of. And we used all our budget.
You know what? We'll touch on that a little bit later. We have a special guest of ESPN Heritage. She is, honestly, it'll probably be easier for you to name the programs that she's not on at this point. But we have Monica McNutt in the house. How are you, ma'am?
Hey, guys. I'm excited to be here. It's always a great conversation on the Dunker Spot. I love Embrace Your Bounce, Steve. And guys, always good to chop it up with you. Let's get into it, gentlemen.
Let's get into it. First, how was the sideline?
So candidly, sideline is not my ministry, okay? I have a tremendous amount of respect for the sideline reporters that do it and do it well and do it consistently. My ultimate goal is to get over to that analyst chair, and so I'm going to just work all the muscles that are required to get there. But I did really enjoy the game. I think a big part of my personal mandate as I move forward is to be boots on the ground in whatever capacity that is. So whether it's sideline analysts, go put together a Snapchat video, like whatever allows me to be boots on the ground, to have real conversations with coaches and players and folks that are working with these guys day to day. That's what I want. So for our first run, I think we got a pretty good game. I'm really excited about both Cade and Jalen, but Cade is just super impressive in a person considering, you know, he missed the first four games of the season. But it was good. I felt the love from you guys and all of our Twitter friends and basketball lovers that supported it. So that was cool. It was really cool.
It was cool to see you. I'm just like, oh my goodness, I know her. She's doing something else now. I was half expecting you to end up on the court taking some technical free throws or something. But, you know, they might have her doing so. I don't know. Like, your rise over like the last year and a half has been incredible to watch. I'm surprised we got you on the pod, honestly. Like, I thought you'd be doing...
Come on, man. Y'all was with me shooting in the gym. That's not going to change. You know what I'm saying? Like, I try very hard to keep the real relationship real. I appreciate that. And we're just going to keep riding the wave, dog. Like, I won't be new and up and coming forever, so we're going to ride the wave.
This is true. Actually, before we move into our main topic, while we're kind of on the rookies, like, who's your rookie of the year right now?
Scotty Barnes. I know he's been injured, but Scotty Barnes is my rookie of the year after Vegas. I think that Toronto's going to be contending and he's going to be playing meaningful minutes. Although I got to say, that boy Evan Mobley is problematic. Woo, child. I think if Detroit were to surprise us and somehow be contending, I mean, you know, the playing game could create some mayhem. There'd be a case to be made for Kay, but I just think they're going to be far back. And so I think Scotty playing valuable minutes on a team that would be in position to do some damage is going to sell the deal, personally.
Yeah, I got you. Steve, where are you at? Since, you know, we'll do a full-blown rookie episode soon, but...
No, you wouldn't have it any other way, sir. I would probably lean Mobley for now just for impact on winning games. Very generic, very cliche, but I like what he's done on both ends of the floor. Like the impact he's had defensively. I think offensively he's growing. I just like what he's done. It's tough to go against Scotty Barnes. He's playing really well as well. But I think those two are clearly the lead horses. Cade's going to have to do a lot of work to sneak in there. But stats always help, so you never know.
He will hopefully get the on-ball reps to kind of make this push as he gets more comfortable. Like, I'm sure at some point the ball's going to shift more in his hands and less in Killian Hayes' hands, as much as that. That's another conversation for another day. Let's get into some New York Knicks talk. They are currently 7-5, seventh in the Eastern Conference right now. This is, I mean, the NBA in general is your wheelhouse, but the Knicks are near and dear to your heart in terms of the work that you do. Monica, what have been your early takeaways from this Knicks team so far?
Give me more OB. Is that like cliche? I love the leap that he's taking. He just looks like a competent NBA player this year. My biggest takeaways so far. Let me see. Do I want to say this basketball smartly or like just say what it is? Something ain't quite working. Like something just not quite working yet. And I think that this group is still trying to build off of the identity of last year's team. which makes sense logically, but the personnel have changed. And we have had many a conversation in the green room. Are you telling me that Alfred Payton and Reggie Bullock were that big of a deal? Not telling you that per se, but the calling card for this squad last year was its defensive prowess. And that has not emerged, what did you say, 75, 12 games in? So I'm not even saying that they have to be that same team, but what is this team's strength? And I think that they're honestly still working through that.
You brought up a great point there as far as the personnel and the impact it's had. Because sometimes when we go into an offseason, we have these moves, we're thinking addition, subtraction. And sometimes it turns into division, a little bit more difficult problem. So I think some of the things me and the Kais talked about preseason was the trade-off. Okay, so you improved your offense in theory based on what you had last year. You're giving up a little bit defensively. But now you're trying to figure out which pieces work offensively. And defensively, you're trying to figure it out. Plus, defense isn't automatic. So what you did last year doesn't carry over. I remember being in Memphis, and we had that defensive team coaching change. We're 1-5 and looking at our bag saying, oh, we didn't pack the defense. What do we do now? So it's one of those things where they're not just trying to find each other, trying to gel. They're trying to get their rhythm going. It's different because they're just, it's not an assumption that they're going to run the same things. So they have more advantages offensively where they can play more random, more drive and kick, more playmakers. But now what do you run? When do you run it? You know, you could just run through Randle. You don't want to do that all the time. But now how do you get to Randle if you have all these other guys? And so on and so forth. I go on.
Well, continue.
This is what the pod is for. Please go on.
Continue. It's not doomsday for me by any means, though. I don't point out those issues as doomsday. I do think that Tibbs' sound heard around the world that made all the national rounds about 10 games turning to 20 and 20 to 30 was legit. But I also think he was particularly frustrated in that moment because we've seen over this first 12 games where the second unit does continue to come in and put on their cape, right, for the first group. Outside of, you know, Boston, the first group played really well. For a stretch there, Kemba was shooting crazy from behind the three, which I always was like, oh, this is excellent, but is this going to last? And then I think what game did Julius just decide enough was enough? In Milwaukee? I think that was in Milwaukee. He turns it on. So the depth and the strength of the second unit is definitely an asset. However, I get it. It's the NBA. 20 points is gone in terms of a lead in the blink of an eye with the way we shoot the basketball. But at the same time, your starters are supposed to set the tempo. And so I think they're just still working through what that is. I think last year's group knew that defense was their strength, no questions asked. And this year's group, because of the weapons they now have, are a little bit more cavalier and, oh, we can get it back. We're going to hit some shots. You know what I mean? And you look up and it don't quite go that way. And then to be honest, I think when you look at this thing macro, yes, I'm following that team almost game to game, but the East as a whole got healthy from COVID and just got better.
And this was kind of my, I don't want to say worry. Worry is too strong of a word. But one of the many takes that got me yelled at among Knicks Twitter was like, I think the Knicks are a better team than they were last year, but I don't necessarily see them being as high up in the standings as they were last year because the rest of the conference got stronger. And heading into the year, just looking at what they are right now, again, we're 12 games in, so there's only so much you can take from it right now. But I think the script has completely flipped for them. Last year, they were an elite defense and a below average offense. This year, they're fourth in offense, I think 25th in defense, which is not where they want to be at all. And so it makes sense. The personnel has changed. They are getting the three balls up this year, which is not typically a tip staple. But when you have Kemba Walker, when you have Evan Fournier, you can shoot off movement or shoot off pick and rolls whenever you need them to, and you fully embrace that, then, of course, that you're going to see a bit of an offensive boom there. With that being said, to your point, I don't think Alfred Payton and Reggie Bullock are headliners by any stretch of the imagination. But if you go from those two guys to Kemba Walker, who is a small aging point guard who doesn't navigate screens particularly well, and Evan Fournier, who we just saw get picked on in the postseason last year, then there's going to be a bit of a dip. Maybe not this drastic of a dip. We'll see how things normalize because they are giving up roughly the same share of three-pointers that they gave up last year, but, like, now teams are just knocking those down. They really didn't do that last year.
At an epic rate. Like, I feel like nobody has come to the Garden and not hit some sort of career number. But continue.
Yeah, like, it's flipped the other way. And, like, there's always, I guess, unless you're Boston, which is weird, like, there's always some sort of three-point variance in terms of three-point defense. So, like, I'm not sure how, quote-unquote, real last year's numbers was, and I also don't know how real it is this year either, because now it just seems abnormally high. Like, that's going to normalize at some point, I would think. And so we'll get a better gauge of what this Knicks defense is. But that's kind of where it goes. Like, I think it was a calculated bet on the Knicks front. Like, okay, we do need to diversify our offense a little bit. We need to get some more talent here, because as great as Julius Randle was last year, he can't do it all. We need to do something to take the pressure off of him. So they add this offensive talent. And it's worked, though the starting lineup in particular is trying to work out some kinks. Like, they do have a lot of options to go to. And the flip side of that is, you have worse defenders out there. So how do you balance, more offensive versatility and the defense slipping, but maybe not to this degree? And I think that's where you're at right now.
Steve, you jumping in?
Are we worried at all about the execution offensively? In the sense that this is a team that can make defenses pay if you're doubling Julius, if you're more aggressive in pick and roll, you have to come up higher. But if you're going to start your sets later in the clock, you're kind of handing that advantage back to the defense. You're kind of handing it back to where now you're playing against the clock and you're not executing in the same way. You're trying to talent your way out of it. Is there a concern there, or is it just natural flow?
Team concern, candidly. Tibbs is who he is. I think I give him all the credit in the world, though, because I do think that he is learning his players, coaching in this era, the whole bit. And if you listen to Derek and Taj and Nerlens talk, especially Taj and Derek, about his evolution as a coach, it has been a sight to behold. But his philosophy of drawing two and then make the best play is his thing. I wonder if more creativity, particularly in a half court set, because I'm captain, give me transition buckets as much as you can. But the reality is every basket, every possession is not going to be that option. I would like to see that as a point of emphasis a little bit more, because you have the ability to do that. But then again, as I'm thinking, you have the ability to do that a little bit more with the second group than the first group. But anyway, I do think that the offense is going to require a little bit more creativity. Because part of why I think they haven't been able to find sync yet is Evan is a guy that's used to being featured. Kemba, for the most part of his career, has been ball dominant, right? Or at least a strong two. And then RJ is looking to make this third year leap. But because he is so cerebral when it comes to the game, he's like, okay, let me allow the spacing to let whatever's trying to evolve, evolve. And you look up and RJ's still on the wing and be going back the other way. Mm-hmm. So I do wonder if, does it need to be Evan's turn, Kemba's turn, RJ's turn, Julius's turn? I don't know if we need to go quite there, but I do think that they would benefit from a little bit more creativity, just creating a little bit more mayhem, keeping defenses a little bit more honest. When Julius is on, it's great. But when Julius, one, he struggles against longer defenders. And when nobody's moving and you can allow that secondary defender to kind of stunt that trap, like come, kind of be in that help side, but play back, it just creates so much confusion. And because nobody else is moving, the rotations are so easy to get back to guys that, for the most part, really like to either catch and shoot, or their help is forcing them to the middle to the other help if it's Evan or Kemba off the bounce.
I'll pose the question to both of you, honestly. In terms of the Knicks' half-court offense, just statistically, they've been pretty good. They're eighth in half-court offense per cleaning the glass. But from a creativity standpoint offensively, it seems like it's one action and then, okay, what's going on? Mm-hmm. And, like, I'll watch a Knicks game and they'll run some good stuff. Like, I love when they go to Spain, they'll generally get some good stuff out of it. Or they'll run, like, some handoff stuff for Evan Fournier. It feels like they're very reliant on whatever their initial action is to create this huge crack in the defense and then be able to kind of play out of it, drive and kick out of that. If it doesn't work, then we get into the ISO stuff. It's Kemba pull-ups. It's Julius Randle kind of slowing things down, surveying the court, and then going to work, getting to the free throw line. And I wonder, like, how could Tibbs incorporate a little bit more versatility there? Steve, you look like you want to jump in.
Well, that's the trade-off I wasn't necessarily anticipating, because Tibbs, you can make all the jokes about his half-court offense all you want. He's got a lot in his bag, and he's evolved, and he's done more, but he's got a thick playbook. And it doesn't feel like they're running as many actions as before, and they're not necessarily chaining them together. So you might see a stagger real quick, but then it goes to a post-up. Or you might see them walk it up and then go to pick and roll, and then what? And they have the personnel and the talent to move guys around, get to more handoffs, get to more staggers, get to more movement to where the defense has to move. Instead, it's very take turnish where, okay, we want to get Kemba going. Here's a pick and roll, but you start it late. Okay, now how do we get RJ going? You go back to last year, they were running actions, running movement because they had to, because that was how they were going to generate any sort of non-Julius post-up or ISO, and they could always lean on that. But now it just kind of feels like, okay, let's have Fournier come off this. And then what? So I want to see more of the movement, more of the creativity, more of the flows to mix in with your random actions and your talent. And now you can kind of use those in unison and combo, as opposed to play slow, defense gets to load up. Now what do we do? And it's been too much of that of late for me, because I liked what they did early. I was the main person saying, yo, this is a Knicks team that actually has multiple guys who can shoot, multiple guys who can play make, multiple guys who can run off pick and roll and make you pay. Hasn't looked like that of late.
Now, there is a part of this, y'all, where you got to hit shots. Like, dudes got to hit shots. Evan, in particular, has gone cold since, I want to say, the first four games, you know what I'm saying? And then it was like, so what's up with that? Now, cart before the horse, horse before the cart, not as featured, not hitting shots. He's had looks that have gone long, or, you know, just haven't hit for whatever reason. Like, you got to hit shots, right? I'm with you, though, Steve. Like, I know that, and I've said this. Like, I don't know if there's more plays, more to the play that's being called, and they just not executing it. But at any level of basketball, particularly in the NBA, setting up in your half court is just a tough day at the office. And for all that is made of the minutes that the starters are playing and Tibbs' philosophy on playing his guys, you have to find a way to get easy baskets. Like, you just, there's not enough easy baskets until Derek and Obi come in, Quick and Obi, and Obi's just racing down the floor, right? Or I'll give you Mitch, right, on a pick and roll high lob. Those are the easiest baskets you get. But in general, you're just not getting any easy baskets. Now, I think basketball people, us, we got to be mindful not to oversimplify, but in the same breath, the game is pretty simple. And there's a cadence and an urgency that is missing in the half court to me.
I can see that. Like, it's, I guess, going back even to the Chicago days, like, has there been a Tibbs coach team that has played with consistent pace in half court?
So I would go back to Derek when they were together the first time. But that's so much of that was like Derek.
Yeah.
Right? And so I think Julius is ascending in this league, but he's not Derek. And Derek's not even Derek of that year anymore. You know what I mean? And so the personalities, right? Like, it's always fun to make these correlations. That starting unit doesn't have a Sasha Fierce, right? Like Beyonce, Sasha Fierce. Like, they are cool, great guys. Julius might be like, all right, that's enough, and decide. RJ, after he doesn't get a call and gets sick of this, he'll rattle off three baskets. But in general, it doesn't feel like, as a collective, there's a switch. Whereas when Derek comes in the game, that switch is already flipped. Like, he ready. You know what I mean? And so that's not even X's and O's. That's just, and we've heard Tibbs mention this at points, that's just effort and energy.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Like, I didn't think of that point. Steve, what'd you have?
I was going to say, it could be as simple as just playing faster and making shots. And this whole conversation mm-hmm. looks different.
Yeah. I mean
we've seen it.
Right, because the first, versus Boston, the Chicago game, like, the issues that are now an issue are not new. They're just catching L's. And, like, we have this conversation in the green room all the time, like, Allen is famous for, this team comes in shooting XYZ from three, or this person doesn't hit threes. And I'm like, yeah, that's cool and all, but the game plan clearly is, when you get to the Garden, we're hunting the three-point line, right? And when we hit the stagnant third quarter, the four-minute drought at the end of games, those are not new. The plays haven't changed. You're just not hitting shots no more.
Mm-hmm. Let's go a little micro here. You mentioned RJ Barrett a little bit earlier. How have you felt about his development, particularly on the offensive side of the ball?
I think RJ is probably going to be one of the few guys that'll probably have linear growth over the course of his career. I think he's got to get back to shooting the three a little bit better. He's kind of took some hits here lately, but you can see year to year the pieces that he's added to his game. I think his strength is super underrated. He's not necessarily the one-on-one guy, but when he beats you off that first step, his ability to finish in contact, and even when he feels like it, to run out in transition. Like, I love his ability to finish. He's got to line up that three ball a little bit better just to keep defenses honest. But he's talked a lot about wanting to be the defender as well, like the guy tasked with stopping the other go-to guy. And I think he can do that, and that's a point of emphasis for him. But offensively, I would like to see him, again, there's a death word when it comes to offenses, be featured a little bit earlier as opposed to after he gets mad and then he rattles off, you know, 6-9 points somewhere late in the second quarter.
Yeah, that transition game, the way he attacks, the way he initiates contact, finishing through that as well, the playmaking and pick and roll continues to develop and he's making moves there. So I agree 100%. I think he's had a really solid start. He keeps building in the right way. And I just like the mindset he has defensively as well. Just wanting that responsibility, that's key for a young player.
Absolutely. I mean, he's another one to me that if he could give me an alter ego. Like, for some reason, I think RJ's path gets forgotten. This man was at Duke. Like, he was the top three pick in the league. Like, this is not no scrub. Like, just because he is a little bit more laid back and has such a high basketball IQ and is not a squeaky wheel, The dude is a bucket, like, when he wants to be. So I would love to see him really turn that switch over, because I think it only takes one to sort of light that first unit on fire.
Yeah, I think he has a unique opportunity to kind of step into that role, just because even with them adding Evan Fournier, with them adding Kemba Walker, like, in terms of the rim pressure guys in this starting lineup, it's still very much Julius Randle, RJ Barrett, and then there's a little bit of a gap from there. So I think that's kind of where RJ can feel now. And to his credit, like, he has improved as a finisher. He's doing better finishing through contact. He's still puncturing the paint. And with the improved spacing around him, like, it makes sense that he's having more success as a driver. So I wonder, and kind of bringing it back to the earlier conversation, like, in terms of the hierarchy, where he should rank. Because I think in terms of, like, just overall stature, like, obviously Kemba's been an all-star before. Julius Randle was just an all-star. I think Randle's your clear number one. And then from there, it feels like it's Kemba, Fournier, then Barrett, who just kind of floats around the perimeter and attacks closeouts. I wonder if he should have more of a role.
I think he should. Like, if you wonder, and I've been said, I think he should. Because, again, like, who's going to be there consistently, knock on wood, bar injury, right? Kemba, back-to-back's questionable. Evan, I don't know that Evan has proven himself any more than RJ has. Personally, I mean, he's been in the league longer, but in terms of the draft pick to this organization, the number three draft pick, like, come on. I think in terms of passing, both, they might be on the same par. RJ might be a little bit more equipped to make the reads because he's been in the system longer, but I don't feel like the ball is going to get stuck if it's with RJ. Like, I trust RJ's decision making. I've long said, how do we feature RJ sooner, earlier? Even because some of this, right, the psychology of the game is you got to hear it. You got your teammates got to feed it to you. This has to get the repetition in your mind so that it can turn over. Because he's not going to wake up tomorrow with an alter ego. And I keep saying alter ego, not that I want him to change his game, but that is something that you are fed over time by your teammates and your coaches. So, and I think feeding him that in particular is not going to make him a high spot. It'll just make him more aggressive and assertive.
And to that point, like, I think consensus on RJ Barrett got a little bit too low after his rookie year because, to your credit, like, he was fed a lot of touches in his rookie year. Mm-hmm. And, like, I don't think he was particularly ready for that. The roster around him surely wasn't built in a way to facilitate him succeeding in that type of role. And so because he had, like, one of the more inefficient rookies, high-volume rookie seasons in recent memory, it was like, okay, RJ's a bust, like, he's overrated, whatever, whatever. And it's like, no, he was thrust into a role that he probably wasn't ready for, and he was playing in a phone booth. And last year, he took noticeable steps. Mm-hmm. while still operating in a phone booth. And now he has more space, and now he's lower on the totem pole offensively. And it works because, like you said, he is a smart player. He is a guy whose jumper has improved leaps and bounds since entering the league. So he can work off ball, and he still had those driving chops. But I'm kind of with you. Like, I think he deserves a little bit more on ball responsibility. My hesitancy with that would be just, what is he doing in the intermediate area? Because I still don't really trust the pull-up for him yet. And so if he's overtaking guy like Kemba in pick and roll in particular, like, I just wonder how teams are going to guard that, particularly late in games. But I do think there's room for more for him offensively.
That's a good question, Akais. I just want to see it. Let's try it. And I don't know. I don't know that the action has to be solely pick and roll for him, right? And I've had this conversation with John Macri on Next Film School. Like, to me, featuring RJ doesn't mean he takes over pick and roll, but it means when they go one way and Julius is on the opposite side, it's a downscreen or some kind of action for him to come off of on the weak side. Because when you look at some of his big time baskets and key moments and runs for this team, he's making a read and cutting to the basketball, right? Either into the paint or some sort of fade, like he's in a good spot to catch and shoot, or it's in transition. And so I don't know that I need him to take over the same spot as Kemba. But I do need there to be something with him in mind as a legitimate option on this play. Besides, oh, his man came to help on Julius.
I feel that. Steve, what do you think?
Well, I was going to ask a question. I was going to ask, do you think maybe the depth of that bench or how that second unit plays has maybe hurt an opportunity to give him a little bit more? Because theoretically, if you could play him with those guys, he might have a little more room. But those guys have their own thing.
No, because I can think of times where he's out there with four guys from the second unit. So, no, especially like quickest him to find his jump shot as of late. I didn't watch the Bucks game back. I was obviously a little busy, but
just a quick flex, no biggie.
While Quick couldn't find his jump shot, no, because there's a handful of times where RJ is out there with Rose, Quick, Obi. And like Nerlens. So I just think that unit suits him a little bit better because they want to get out and go. But I don't think that first unit can get out and go to me. Like the only person in that first unit that probably. No, I feel like they all. Julius doesn't necessarily want to all the time. Kemba does it in spots. Evan can fill the lane. Fine. Fill the lane, pull up for three. Like if you want, great. And like they should be out and going a little bit more in my mind. But the problem is, I would be curious to look this up. The problem is defensively, they're giving up offensive boards, and so you don't have that window to get out and go because the other team is back.
And they're also just taking the ball out of the net a lot more than they were last year. So those transition opportunities just aren't there like we'd like them to be. Right.
Mm-hmm.
To the front court, how have you felt about Mitchell Robinson this year?
It was such a shiny new toy when he was first healthy in the season. And I still think Mitch has tremendous upside. He's a guy that it's tough to hide when he runs into a tough matchup. Like, there's kind of either this is a good matchup for Mitch or it's not. Like, and I do think we forget how young he is. And how much time he's missed. You know, like, I can remember in college, Villanova running pickers, spinning around, trying to defend Villanova's offense. So I'm not going to make light of mismatches and teams that, you know, kill you on some of that pick and roll action, because it's tough. But Mitch has so much upside. He could be such a force. I don't know, personally, I can't speak to work habits in terms of, like, studying and wanting to improve the nuances of defending, but it's just kind of been on or off. Like, there's not been a ton of middle ground when it comes to Mitch.
I think one of the things that encouraged me about Mitchell Robinson, like, before he got hurt last year and early this year, like, it seemed like he was making steps defensively. Like, the big thing was he was not in foul trouble every other game. And I'm just like, if he can actually stay on the floor, like, with this kind of athleticism, with this kind of lift, just the shot blocking instincts in general, like, he's perfect for what Tibbs wants to do. Like, with the way they overload and having him on the back line to clean things up, like, this suits him perfectly. But to your point, it has been a little bit uneven. And this is where Tibbs goes to the guys he trusts. Like, you'll have Taj come off the bench. He has Nerlens as he's gotten healthy. We've seen a little bit of Julius at the five. Like, I'm curious to get your thoughts on what those lineups will look like to you. But I don't know. Like, I've oddly expected a little bit more from Mitchell Robinson, if that makes sense. Like, I know it's been a tough, like, year and a half stretch for him in terms of the injuries and stuff. But, like, I want to see him put it together.
I'm with you. And I definitely want to see him put it together. But I think you really got to, like, it's the matchup thing for him. I mean, he couldn't work with Giannis. And I think he might have come up lame in that game, the first game. I'm not talking about the game at home. Vucevic, you know, guys that stretch the floor and are willing to shoot from that five spot, it kind of puts him in no man's land a little bit. I'm trying to think of other games he played so far where he, what's my dude in Orlando? He actually played decent against Orlando, I thought. The Pacers, there's some times where the other guy, Sabonis, and not even Sabonis, what's my man that hit seven threes versus from the Pacers?
Miles Turner.
There you go. Like, again, a big guy stretched the floor, and there's still a physicality that I think Taj is more willing to go bang and use all his fouls. Nerlens has the ability to use his footwork and his length, and then Mitch is kind of still learning. So either, like I said, it's either a good matchup for him or it's not. And I think he's also still really energized offensively, which is probably every basketball player's instinct outside of, you know, the straight up defensive guys that hanging their hat on that purely. And so, you know, if it's not going for him offensively, you kind of, you know, hey, Mitch, come on, get off the ground. Come on.
I feel that. Steve, how have you felt about Mitchell Robinson this year?
I think he's still just working his way back, into shape. I think longer time periods on the floor hurt him, but I think he's still got that potential. I think defensively, it's just getting the reps to find the nuance. If you're playing a pick and pop guy, well, do I show at the level? How do I get back out? You know, how do I maintain and keep the ball in front and still protect the paint? Just those little things, because he has the raw potential. But again, we've seen when he plays, he develops it, he shows it consistently. But he's just got to get back in that rhythm, because you see flashes where, hey, he's great defensively, he's solid, he's blocking. And then, as was stated, tough matchups put him in a spot where he's got to think on the fly. And now he's trying to do multiple things at once. And it's not quite the same for him. So I just think the more experience he gets, the more time he gets back, he'll be okay. I mean, you got a situation where they're putting him on Giannis. So he's getting on-ball reps. He's getting responsibility. But now, hey, how do you guard in space? How do you get back to your help position? Mm-hmm. Just those little type of things for him. Can you stay down on a pump fake? Can you still contain if you're rotating? Those kind of things for him. So I like what he brings to the table, but it's just going to take a little bit of time for him.
And we all agree. Like, there's still tremendous upside for Mitch. Like, don't let that deceive you. But right now, we are where we are. And he's currently a part of that first unit. So...
I love it. While we're on the front court, we talked about this a little bit pre-show. Do either of you have Jericho Sims tapes?
I left him in summer league. He almost got in the game the other night too, and then I forgot what happened, but he didn't go.
I felt bad for him. They called him right back.
Yeah, right. He was ready.
Oh, he was so juiced, and I felt bad. He walked back. You know, he's big too, so it didn't even look right. I felt bad for him. You know, you don't want to see a big dude walk like that. But I love his energy personally. Yep. I would love, like, he just got a bounce to him. I've always loved players that have bounce to him. Like,
whole lot of bounce.
Isaiah Stewart's, people like that. He plays with energy. He's got size. He's got the prototypical Tibbs type. It's just, you know, will he ever see the floor?
Will he ever see the floor? I mean, this is a team that, I guess, you don't want to be a rookie on a squad where you play the entire time, maybe, because, you know, what does that say about the squad? Like, I think this team is still figuring out. But I would like to see Jericho get a little bit more time. Just a little bit more time. But to be fair, we've seen through the Tibbs system, like, it's more the second year, right? Like, Obi was spare minutes last year, too. And now, like, Obi's giving you a good 12 almost regularly. So we'll see what happens there.
Good. Let's cap off. Go ahead.
Steve. Well, I had an Obi question real quick. What's been the best part of him going from last year to this year for you?
His ability to finish in traffic. Like, I knew that he could get out in transition last year. I'm just not sure the team was thinking that way. But this year, transition, yes, but also secondary break. He's right hand to left hand finish between two, like offensive rebounds, put back. Like, he just looks so much more competent. I want him to keep working on his jumper. Like, we got to settle that in. But he just looks so much more competent and confident, right? Like, even if he's not looking to score, but just that he's making the right play.
To me, it feels like he's thinking less on the floor.
Yeah, so it looks so much more natural.
Going right into, even if he's, hey, I got another handoff, let me go right to it, let me get another chance to roll. Just those little things, as opposed to, what do I do? Wait, I'm spacing. I'm trying to post up. It just feels like he's playing basketball again, which has been fun to watch.
And I think that applies on both sides of the ball. Now, he's in his second year, like, you are running the guys that take the cookies, it's fine. But in general, like, he's usually in the right spot rotation-wise. When he does draw one-on-one, I think he's more aware of how to use his body on this level. And again, like, there's always little clips and moments that stick with you. But again, that second unit behind Derrick Rose, like, there's just a different kind of energy. And he's also talked about how Julius is like, yo, if we're in a game together, just go. Like, I'm going to find you. And so that plays into his strength. And you can see the confidence trickle down into so many other aspects of his game.
My one Obi take is, I'm just glad that he is actually involved in, like, handoffs and pick and rolls this year instead of just being spaced majority of the time like he was last year. Like, that is very much not his skill set. Like, that's a developing part of his skill set. To your point, the jumper does need to get better. But it's just like, man, let the man roll. Like, this is why he was one of the most dominant players in college basketball while he was there. Like, you couldn't stop him with a runway.
Yeah, I feel you, but I also do kind of understand what happened last year a little bit. Like, he was prone to a little indecisiveness. Maybe not the best decision with the ball, right? And so, again, it's just the learning curve. And I think last year, again, this team was slower in terms of pace, slower in terms of scoring. It was very clearly give the ball to Julius and we'll figure the rest out. You know what I mean? And that included, hey, you don't even know exactly what you're going to do, so stay out the way. Like, if we're going to pass from Julius, let's go to a guy that's going to be assertive and you just be in a position to catch and finish. So, I just, Obi and Quick. And Quick, obviously, especially the latter part of last season, played some quality minutes. This year he comes in struggling with his shot a little bit. I have long said that I love the opportunity for Quick to learn under D. Rose. But I still need him to turn it over too, in terms of not just gamer shots, but like good shots.
Yeah, I feel that. Steve, do you have something?
I was going to go left. I had one last next question.
Okay.
Because I have a theory here. So, like, we know the garden is the garden, right?
Mm-hmm.
The mystique of the garden. And part of the mystique has always been the best players come to play. Mm-hmm. And they have their moments. And they take it to the Knicks, quote unquote. But this season, this is a list of guys who have scored 20 or more here recently.
Oh, Lord.
Terrence Ross. Cole Anthony. OG Anunoby. Gary Trent Jr. Ricky Rubio. Evan Mobley. Pat Connaughton. Is this weird to anyone else or just me?
It's a little odd, I'll be honest. It's a little odd. As someone who watched the Knicks Magic game, we talked about this on the pod, in which they're running the same stagger play for Terrence Ross like six times in a row, and he's getting a bucket just about every time. It was a whole thing. But yeah, it's weird that the role guys plus OG are doing their thing in the garden.
I'm going to counterpoint that. And say that the philosophy is the main guys will not beat us. And by default, somebody gets loose. The only exclusion I will have for that statement is OG, who quite honestly worked Julius. But otherwise, like, listen, and it was so funny. We had a funny moment post-game with this. Because you're right, the mystique of the garden is a big piece of this. And fans are back in the arena and the whole bit. But dog, like, what's the alternative? Y'all want to go back to an empty arena so that the road team gonna come in here and be gassed? Like, what are we doing? That's not an option. So, bring the mystique of the garden, match the energy of the people that are predominantly rooting for you. Let's go.
There we go. This is the Cree from Monica McNutt. Please listen. Shush. We need it. We need it. Okay, it's a lot of Knicks talk. Let's bounce around the NBA for a little bit. First, as a Hooper, Mm-hmm. And as someone that is covering the league right now, how have you felt about the officiating this year?
So I am underwhelmed with this whole conversation around officiating. I think right now it's still new. I think long term, this is good for the game. I know, like, statistically, Dame, James, like, Trey, everybody's down, blah, blah, blah. Officiating, new ball, pick your poison. Okay, great. If your stars are down, everybody's going to be down. So your stars are still going to be leading scoring. Like, I think that this conversation is overblown. Is it a change? Yes. But again, and my default to lots of things is, what's the alternative? If it does get changed, again, it's not going to get changed this year. And so I do not buy that list your favorite scoring NBA player is not going to be able to navigate this. And again, if their average goes from 26 to 22, the dude that averaged 6 is probably now averaging 2. So you're still one of the best scorers in the league. Like, get over. What are we doing? Come on, let's go.
I feel validated by that response, because that's the same energy I had.
Like, I mean, come on now. And to be fair, human nature is points of emphasis to be points of emphasis for the first 2 months of the season. Like, let's get the playoffs. Y'all gonna get some of these back. Calm down.
I love it. Although Dame is fed up.
Dame is fed up. But I think, and this is the other thing, a bad night for a group of officials cannot be completely blamed on the rules.
It's more fun that way, though.
And it's plenty to talk about. I love Dame being like, I didn't even think the rule was going to affect me, but this is unacceptable. All right. Fair enough.
And we get a fair enough. You are now officially a dunker spot trooper. But like, the whole Dame thing was funny to me, because this is why I love Twitter, because Dame makes that comment, and like not even 10 minutes after the comment hits the timeline, there's someone with like a video compilation of threat of Dame doing like rip throughs and leaning in off the pump fakes and stuff. I'm just like, man, everyone does it. Like, don't. Come on. We ain't got to do that. Yeah. But okay, I definitely feel you on that. Let's go out west. How you felt about these Warriors? Are they the favorites right now?
Favorites seem so aggressive. I'm probably one of the small few that think the Utah Jazz are going to turn a corner.
Okay.
And it was so funny because working that game Wednesday night with Jeff Van Gundy and a lot of our pregame stuff, he says this, and I think he says it on air a fair amount. Like, winning is hard. And I know that we consume basketball for a living and we pick these things apart, but like, winning still is hard, and being good is very hard. And I don't think we should take that for granted. We're 12 games in, maybe 10 to 12 games in. Fantastic. The Warriors are the first team to 10 wins. That is awesome. We have 72 games to go. Like, and I'm not saying that the Warriors are going to flip the script and be trash. I think they are legitimate contenders, but I'm a lot more patient, I think. And granted, it's our job to come up with headlines. You can only deal with the games that you've seen so far. But I think Utah is the real deal. Denver, yes, the Warriors are the real deal out there. I'm curious to see what this Clipper squad looks like without Kawhi. Is this kind of some weird addition by subtraction thing we're going to have going? I think Phoenix is going to be back in the fold. The only team that people think are strong contenders that I'm probably out on is probably the Lakers. I just don't think that their age is going to help them.
Oh, okay. We can segue right into that. Like, how is this a Russ-related concern, or is this all just, is it just the age for you?
No. It's just the age. I think basketball IQ, enough of those guys have come up short or have done it that they would be able to put it together in terms of the sacrifices that they need to make as individuals. So far, to me, it's just looked kind of clunky from them. And even if you go to last night's that went over the Miami, LeBron wasn't playing. Like, LeBron's going to be on the floor when it matters. The same kind of thing with the Knicks. Sure. The Lakers look like our circa, 2011, 2012 All-Star team? But the rest of the West got better, too. Like, do nobody care about that? Oklahoma City don't care about that? Come on, Al.
I got a concern with the Lakers. I don't know if they can win enough games for their playoff experience to help them. Because if they do the whole play-in thing again, we saw how that went. So they need to get a 4 seed at least, but they had to stay healthy. So, like, that to me is the balance where it's like, okay, we know if we get to the playoffs, we can do it. But if you're the 7 seed and you got to try and deal with Memphis and then play Utah or Golden State, you're behind the 8 ball, pal. Yeah.
It's not a given. It's not a given. I'm with you, Steve. It's not a given.
Might be a little tough for those Lakers. Let's go out east. How have you felt about the Chicago Bulls this year?
it's funny because like the early conversations were like, Bulls Knicks, right? The one thing that I will give the Bulls that I think they have over the Knicks is DeRozan's ability to get a bucket. Like Julius can get you a bucket, but not quite like DeMar gonna get you a bucket. And then if DeMar can't get it, Zach LaVine, after Julius, we're still working on who's our guy, right? Mm-hmm. Like, who's our guy? I think I like Lonzo Ball. Hate the way his jump shot looks, but it's going in. I'm partial to big guards with tremendous passing ability. And I think I said this when this Bulls team really kind of first came together. I think we also sleep a little bit on Billy Donovan as a coach. You know what I mean? Like, in terms of being able to put, and this team isn't as young as his early OKC teams, but in terms of being able to deal with astronomical talent and making it work, been there, done that a little bit. And I don't even know that the star power in this squad compares to, but I guess maybe at that point in those guys' careers, and maybe it's very similar.
To the Billy Donovan point, like, just his ability to coach defense. Like, he's, to this point, we're still early in the season, but, like, I've been proven very wrong about Chicago's defense. That was my primary reason why I had them as a play-in team heading into this year. I'm just like, I know the offense is going to be good. I just don't know if they'll defend well enough, and they have done that.
Loud wrong. you owe Caruso and Javonte Green an apology.
Caruso? One of my producers has Caruso on his fantasy team. He's always into Caruso stats. I'm like, wow, he's doing all that for you?
I respect. It's like, I knew they had guys. Like, Caruso was the person that I highlighted. Like, it's a very good pickup. Like, they have guys that can defend. I was worried about, couldn't they get those guys on the court in lineups that make sense on both ends? I had questions. And to this point, they've crushed it. The defense is high level. Like, they are scoring at a pretty efficient clip late in games. And they're doing so without Nikola Vucevic really producing any kind of rate that we would expect from him. And now he's out with COVID. Mm-hmm. So we'll just have to see, like, how he responds from that. But, yeah, I'm very impressed with what the Bulls have done so far.
I just think, though, yes, the Bulls are impressive, but I think the East is about as crazy as it's been in a long time. Like, outside of, if you buy Brooklyn, it will create some real separation. Milwaukee has not yet, but if you think that they will, and then Philly's kind of hit or miss. Like, even if you say those three will separate, then maybe there's a tier where Miami is. Everybody else, like, I just don't think there's going to be a ton of separation.
The East is fun. There's only a couple teams where it's like, sorry, Indiana.
Right, and even the air teams, right? Like, they come in with some tape, filling themselves. Miles Turner, 7 threes. Are you kidding me? Like, what is going on? I mean, Knicks have lost to Miami and Orlando. Like, what's up? I saw a very good-looking Detroit team that, when they're playing with the high energy and Jeremy Grant is giving you buckets and Cade has complete control over the pace of the game. Come on now. The East is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I got to stop with the Pistons hype. That got me in trouble.
It's not hype, but it's, you can see it. You can start to see it.
I turned it into hype, though. It didn't work out.
Steve had the Pistons third knees.
He
didn't have them third knees.
The Central Division.
I just wanted to bait him a little bit. But he did like this Pistons team coming in to the year. And this was off the board, but while we're on the East, what's going on in Atlanta?
I don't know. Tell me, because you know I got a lot to keep an eye on. What's going on in Atlanta?
A lot of mess. Like, the defense is not good. Trae Young has been uneven this year. And he's also like the only guy on the Hawks team that gets to the rim. And so you combine that with a little bit of health stuff, some down shooting, like Kevin Herter started out the year terribly shooting from three. It's just been a lot of stuff. And then Nate McMillan is also doing all bench lineups to try to figure out all this talent and stuff. And that hasn't really worked either.
Really? You just snuck that in there.
Yeah, Come on, just for you.
It's logic. You have to play the guys you have. I'm not doing this with you, man. No, not today. I'm in a good mood.
I'll tell you what's going on with Atlanta. Per your favorite NBA player, Paul George, it's the new basketball.
There we go.
Hopefully. It's the Wilson ball in Atlanta. Don't worry about it. They're just adjusting. Now, I will say this. Of all the guys that I think we're going to have to adjust to some of the officiating, Trey was one of them because he's younger in his career and he's smaller built. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to say that that's the whole thing in Atlanta. I just, listen, y'all, we 10 games in. Remember, Atlanta stunk for a minute there last year, and then they went on this run, and they knocked off two teams in the playoffs. Like,
it's true.
You know what I mean? Like, it could also be the law of conservation of energy. Like, they just, you know.
Trey did say he was bored. He's already ready for playoff basketball. And it's just like, you got to get there first.
Yeah. Watch yourself, right. Watch yourself there, young fella.
Nothing says we're 11 games in like the Wizards being number one in the East.
Hey, let's go to my hometown. Talk to me nice. Come on, DC basketball. Hey, chill. This is a experienced, now newly experienced Wizards squad. Got some championship pedigree. Okay. They didn't get the rings on the East Coast. Not nowhere near the Wizards, but they're now Wizards. And Bradley Beal is still a bucket.
There's only one of us here who didn't see it with the Wizards. I'm not going to name any names, but it ain't me.
So there's two of us. There's two of us here that didn't see it, but partly because of my history.
That's biased, though. That don't count. That's natural tendency. Right. That's tendency. Okay. Yeah, you good. You good.
Excuse me for not believing in the Wizards' defense this year. Like I'm sorry, their interior. Like
you owe Montrez an apology.
You definitely owe Montrez an apology and Thomas Bryant when he gets healthy and Daniel Gafford.
I like Gafford defensively. And even he's jumpy. So, like, you know, Montrez has been fine this year. Like, I'm not hating. This is why I've been wrong so far. Like, they've been better defensively than I thought they would be.
Listen, y'all just promised me that we'll do this around Christmas, New Year's again and see where we are. I love it. I love 11 games in, 12 games in. But, like, we all agree. Like, there's still a lot to be revealed.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay.
Guys, you got to sell the PS5 for us to do that again.
Man, they already saying that they're not shipping out. No, I'm holding on to this thing for dear life.
Wait,
you got three of them.
Don't lie to these people.
What is happening?
Steve's trying to get people to search my house is what's happening. Absolutely not. Okay, so I don't want to go super deep into the Ben Simmons theme because there's a lot there. What I will say, we'll stick to the basics here. He wants out. The Sixers are going to have to trade him at some point. What are some teams that make sense for Ben Simmons, in your opinion?
Let me think. Hold on.
Minnesota for me.
Minnesota? Here's my thing. Does Ben Simmons have a particular set of basketball skills that can help teams? Yes. But if he's not right, like, it's hard for me to even go here. Because you're just going to be a mess somewhere else. If he is not flippantly tossing around something, excuse me, I'm chewing on ice. If he is not flippantly tossing around something that our generation in particular seems to want to take much more serious in mental health. So it's hard for me to buy that it's just a change of scene. Although, having conversation with Hoops folks getting ready for that Detroit-Houston game, someone did point out that besides his knee injury, Markel Fultz is now fine away from Philly.
That's pretty interesting. My hot take on I don't even know if it classifies as a hot take, but like I want to see Ben Simmons in Atlanta. This is something I wrote about over at basketballnews.com. Like I think there's something to be done there.
I mean, you got who's leaving though? Like that's the other part, right? Like you want to see him in Atlanta, but then what does that look like? Because in theory, you throw him in Atlanta right now. I'm with you. Like, they got enough shooters. You can compensate for his inability to shoot. He'll attack. He'll find Trey. He'll find John Collins. Like he'll play defense. Great, love it. But it's not. That team won't stay the same.
Right. And like I think what makes Atlanta an intriguing trade partner, not just for Ben Simmons, but just in general. Like part of their problem right now is I feel like they have a little bit too much talent and they're trying to juggle everything. They have a lot of pieces they can cobble together. They have a lot of mid-tier salaries they want to match for a max guy. They have the young pieces, DeAndre Hunter, Cam Reddish, Onyeka Okongwu, like packaging maybe two of those three or one of those three, depending on who they're trading for. Like they have the ingredients to make a star level trade, I think. And I think the fit makes sense.
Okay. The idea that they have too much talent is not necessarily new. So I can see that. Let me think. There's something intriguing about Dallas for me. I don't know exactly how it would work in terms of what pieces, if Porzingis doesn't want to be there, then that seems kind of logical, but I don't know that Porzingis is anything that Philly would be interested in.
I'm just about to say, like, Porzingis and Simmons just to make everybody mad. A trade everyone hates.
Like I don't think that helps Philly at all. I really like Jalen Brunson. And I would hate to see him kind of get tied up in that, although he's a guy to me that could be in Philly and could be helpful.
Now, this is interesting. Like, I wonder what that fit with him and Luka would be like. I think it would help for them to have someone aside from Luka that kind of push the pace.
Push the pace and get a basket over bigger guards, right? You know, like, and just get in the paint and be able to finish. Like, I think Jalen is going to have a terrific career. He's very steady off-guard point guard. What's my man? That was also a Nick at one point that's there. Tim Hardaway Jr. to me, he's a little bit smaller and can be slightly erratic. And then thinking of their bigs, like, they're not stretch bigs per se. So that was interesting. I mean, everybody talks about Portland. I don't really see that as a, I mean, it's whatever. The thing with Portland is obviously getting Dame to Philly. But I don't think, I have no reason to believe, or I cannot understand why Portland would ever do that. So.
And Dame will let you know that he is not looking to do that either.
As basketball people, what did you guys think of the Dame piece with Chris Haynes?
Which one?
That's true. The I'm not leaving because of my family and all my people here.
I thought that's how he felt. I never thought he was leaving. I just thought he was mad. But that was me. I had the boring perspective on the Dame saga.
Do you think he leaves ever? You don't think he leaves ever?
I wouldn't say that.
Yeah.
Just not yet.
The whole Dame thing to me feels like, you know, the meme where it's like people in a party and then there's like someone up in the corner. It's like, I bet they don't know XYZ. I feel like this is the Dave thing. I bet they don't know I'm loyal. I bet they don't know that I'm going to stay on my team forever. It is just like, yeah, all right, cool. Yeah, we heard you the first time. That's where I'm at on the whole Dave thing.
You're just mad that he rapped at you in a song.
He didn't rap at me. He rapped at his, the haters, I guess. I don't know. Like,
are you a Dame hater, Nikai?
Barred you right up.
I don't like this narrative. No, I'm not a Dame hater. Like,
okay, we're just checking.
Yeah, Dame is cool in my book. I just find that to be tiring. Like, we know you don't want to leave Portland. We know you love Portland. Portland's not trading you. You don't want to be traded. Cool. I don't want to hear about your meetings. Like, we're good.
You don't want to hear about the lunch?
No, like, we're good.
The Uber ride, the gated community, none of it?
The spread?
LeBron having an elevator in his house is the most important thing I took for that story. That is incredible.
Okay, fair. I love having this conversation with you guys. I think everything is the answer for right now. I'm kind of with Steve on this. Like, okay, we admire that. Okay.
We'll see. Cool.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't know how many more ways he could say I'm not built like y'all.
Cool. For now.
Like, all right, cool. You're not on a super team. Congratulations. Last question for you. A bit of a two-parter.
See, it came out. It came out. You saw it come out, right?
What do you...
I did.
I'm just saying, we're good. We're good. Monica, who's the best player in the world?
In the world? Cynthia Cooper. My basketball savant crush. Love, inspiration. Best player in the whole wide world? Golly, why? I don't know. Kevin Durant. It's my guy. I'm going with KD.
Okay. Steve, who you got?
You took my answer. I was going to say KD with the way he's playing right now. So I'll pivot and just say Giannis.
Okay. That's fine. Okay, all right.
I'll be the Jokic guy on pod. That's fine.
Oh, that's cute.
Wow.
That's cute.
I mean, that man, obviously, he just won MVP last year. But, like, I don't think enough people are talking about how he's been a serviceable defender for a minute now.
Yeah.
But, like, he's legitimately been good this year. And I don't think that's gotten enough pub.
Well, because he, now we're debating whether Serbia or South Philly is a tougher region to grow up in. So there's that.
Yes.
We're now distracted about those things. I really think the Joker suffers from the small market thing. I don't think people talk enough about Denver, period. You know what I'm saying?
That's also true.
Except for when Denver and Utah fans used to come at my head when I started throwing a jump last year. I was like, wait a minute. I just watched a little bit of tape. Like, calm down.
Oh, no.
What? Seems bad, but calm down.
Hey, they come quick, though.
Very quickly. It's the small market complex.
I will not offend Salt Lake or Denver. So salute to Michael Malone.
Michael. Yes.
I think Steve still has Utah fans in his mentions right now.
No, I still have Denver fans, by mention, talking about the Jokic push. I think I've seen every phase of that debate. I've lost track.
Where were you on it? You got the people going?
I just posted the clip and I'm like, what's going on? And people are still talking.
Oh.
Oh, welcome to the Twitter machine. You're just going to get quote tweeted forever now.
Forever. You're going to become a meme.
My life is a meme.
There it is. Oh, Jesus. Monica, where can the people find you? What do you have coming up next? When are you hosting SportsCenter again? What's happening?
Honestly, I'm on a sneaky little bit of a hiatus for the next couple of days. I have women's college basketball on Sunday. I'm not sure when this pod is dropping. Sunday, 11:14. One of my first loves. So I'm excited to get in the mix with that. And then, you know, we're rolling with Knicks coverage. My next sideline assignment will be December 8th. Bucks at Heat. So that's a spicy one. I'm looking forward to that. And then, you know.
Is that in Miami?
In Miami.
I may just have to see you there.
Okay, let me know. You know what I'm saying? I might tackle an extra day for mental wellness and balance.
I respect it.
Steve, don't laugh. That's a legit thing.
No. I agree. I'm just laughing at Nikias thinking he can go back to Miami after he's slandered Udonis Haslam for the last 25 years.
Do we need? I don't even know if we have time to get into the UD thing on this pod.
Let that man live. Let him live.
Why are you slandering him? He's a great locker room guy. Culture. You hate culture.
Don't do this. I appreciate you like aiming for like 600 more Miami Heat fan followers after this podcast. But no, I don't hate culture. My refrain has always been like, Udonis Haslam should never leave the Miami Heat organization. Udonis Haslam also should not have a roster spot. Those are two different things for me.
You know what? As someone who has met guys fighting for spots the whole bit, I also had a slightly similar take on Dwayne Wade's son on G League squad. However, if I had a G League team, oh, my baby be on the team. Like, what's up? At me all day. So I think everything is not always quantifiable. You know what I mean? And that's okay.
Until you get into a situation like last night in which Udonis Haslam and PJ Tucker on the floor at the same time, and the Heat are still trying to run pick and rolls with two guys that can't roll.
But you're gonna have that situation 8 out of 82 games, maybe. Like, don't hype it up.
They lost the game. I'm just saying.
Let that man shoot.
It's game jumping. 12.
They all count.
Whatever. Fair enough.
Oh goodness. That's a good place to end. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We're on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us. You can find me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. You can find Steve at SteveJones20. You can find Monica at McNutMonica. And with that, we will catch y'all next week.
Steph Curry's the best player in the world.